systematic errors, but also they can be estimated quite well. There are elaborated tools, and then maybe it raises the uncertainty by another percent, but it's also this can be controlled with more computer power, but nothing prevents us here to work directly at finite lambda. So this is lambda, it's really here for any other interaction. Is really here in the exponent and not expanded perturbatively. So, and then all the paths which are far from classical, far from the minimum, are taken into consideration by this Monte Carlo procedure, so with the probability that they correspond to, and we do not need on this rotating phase cancellation. That would be a disaster, because if we have, let's say, if we generate paths and we have one but we miss, which is far from classical, but we miss its neighbors, then the cancellation doesn't work, and then we could get completely wrong results. Although theoretically it's correct, but in practice, if we have a finite set of paths, we could get a completely wrong result. Here the situation is much better, because if something is very far, then usually it has a very large Euclidean action, and then the contribution is tiny anyhow. So here the axis is better convergence probability. We are much better off than if we would work in Minkowski space. So now what does this Monte Carlo simulation has to do? First of all, it generates a set of points, such paths, which are given by discrete points. So in x1 to xn, gives the position in each discrete time, determines a position. So the whole, okay, if we have this skeleton path here, this in each time step, we have the position given. This is one path. So this is an xi, this x of ti. And the whole path here is what I write with the square bracket x. So we deal with such paths x, discrete paths x, given by n coordinates. And now the algorithm generates one path after the other, an x prime, x2 prime, etc., based on the previous one. And how to do that we will see in a moment. And in case if you generate some things that are probabilistically based on the previous entry, then this is known as a Markov chain. So we build a Markov chain of such discrete paths. And the conditions is, first of all, we have something called ergodicity. Ergodicity means simply that all possible paths which are there in the functional in the path interval should also be accessible by the algorithm. So if the algorithm stops, eliminates part of the possible paths, then we do something wrong. Because even if they are suppressed, they should be accessible within a finite number of steps. And this is quite obvious, but it has the sophisticated name ergodicity. But what is then the more practical condition is called detailed balance. Now, if we proceed from one path to the next, so we actually suggest a new path, and then we decide if we accept it or not. So we suggest the change of the previous path, and if the transition, the probability to accept such a transition from x to x prime, and the inverse probability that's coming, if that would be x prime, if we want to go to x, their ratio should be given by the ratio of the two probabilities here. So that means, for instance, if we suggest a change which raises the Euclidean action a lot, then we go into a region which is less probable, and then this is unlikely to be accepted as a small rate. If we do the inverse, we start from high action and go down, then this is much more likely to be accepted, because we get into the more probable region of low action. And this is exactly reflected here. We have the low probability here, the high probability here, and this ratio must be the same. So if we do many, the probabilities are already given here, so the partition function cancels out, so it is simply the difference in the exponent between the actions before and after the change. So if we perform many of the steps, millions of the steps, and in each step we obey these detailed balance conditions, I think it is intuitively clear. There are not a rigorous proof for that, but that then we will get a distribution of paths which is exactly given as it should be with this probability distribution. That P of X is proportional to the minus D gradient action. Like if you want to raise the action, it is suppressed. If you go down, it is enhanced, it is more probable, and the exactly as the system tells us, and if you obey this in each step and perform many, many steps, then you get a distribution which is exactly like this. This is what detailed balance tells us. Now there are different ways to implement feed. This is the real condition. Now we can implement this in different ways, and the simplest way is called the Metropolis algorithm. Again, we generate this Markov chain of paths, and say we take one path and modify only one of the components of it. So let's say we have a path and we take this xi here and just suggest a change to inside some interval here. Just let's say we suggest to change this to that one. And then this will be the old path x, and with this modified version it will be the new path x prime. So that's the minimal change we can do, and it is good to do a small change at a time. Many small changes are much better than trying a large change. And we have to limit the range somehow. Let's say, for instance, the previous value plus minus 0.1 is the range where the new value can be. So let's say we suggest such a change, and now we can compute, of course, the actual gradient action of the previous and of the new, of the suggested new path. And what Metropolis tells us is if the action decreases or stays constant, then we accept it. If it increases, we accept it only with this probability here. So this is e to the minus the increase of action. So if it increases a lot, this gives us a small number. And then we compute this number. This must be something smaller than 1, maybe 0.37. And then we draw another random number between 0 and 1, and if it's below 0.37, we accept it, otherwise we reject it. We do then a random decision with this probability to accept the change or not. If we accept it, we continue with this x prime and go to the next suggestion, maybe next point suggestion to x 2 prime, etc. If it is rejected, then we leave it at x prime and also go to the next point and just leave it where it was and continue this way. So we do this millions and millions of times, and it is clear that this Metropolis probabilities implement this decision, right? Because here you have, for if it goes down up, then if it goes down it is 1, if it goes up you have this ratio, so you implement with this definition. It's not the only solution, but it's a solution to implement detailed balance. To start the simulation, we still have to give the system, the computer, one initial path. It could be in principle anything. So we could start with all the zeros, for instance, x1 to xn all zeros. This would be called a cold start or some other constant. Or we can take random numbers between, say, minus 1 and 1. This is a hot start. Then usually we have a very high action to start with because we have a large kinetic term. If neighbors are much distinct, let's say if you have something like this and this, this, so we have a very high kinetic term, so we would have a large action to start with, and the hot starts are usually better because they are less biased, they are more general. And then first we have to simulate for a long time just to terminalize, to get the system into the right range, so to make it independent of the starting point. Once this is done, then we take a configuration, say this is now a good configuration, and then we keep on simulating. Of course, the next little update is not something independent, right? We have to do, let's say, another 10,000 update steps until we get something which can be considered decorrelated, statistically independent, and then this is the next good configuration that we can use. I illustrate this here. It's a bit small, but this would be a case of three hot starts, which all have very high Euclidean action to start with. And in the beginning, when I run the system, easily finds ways to lower the action because it is high to start with. So it which will always be accepted by Metropolis. So it goes down here. It goes down, but not quite to zero. Okay, if all x's are zero, then it will be zero. But if it is already, the paths are already quite smooth, let's say, like this here, then most suggestions would tend to increase the action, right? If we start from something smooth, it wants to increase it. Most random suggestion would increase it. On the other hand, those who increase it are not always accepted, but those who decrease it are always accepted. So here we have then the equilibrium between two forces, one which wants to increase the action, because most suggestions want to increase it, and the other one wants to decrease it, because here the acceptance probability is better. So then it fluctuates up and down, and once we are in a situation where the action fluctuates around the stable minimum, then we can say the system is thermalized, and then we can start to use the configuration. So in this case, maybe I would say this is if I go through all the points and suggest a change, this is what I call one sweep. Let's say in this case I will maybe discard 4,000 sweeps, just say this is thermalization, this is just to get started, this we forget about, and then we take a configurator, a path here. And then maybe we would wait 1,000 sweeps and take the next one, 1,000 sweeps, next one, just to, they are in the right region, but just to make sure that they are practically independent from each other. And what I did is what I picked out here, number 4,000, 5,000, 6,000, these are the good ones, the golden configurations that I really use for the numerical measurement of a quantity. And then I accumulate such good configurations, maybe 10,000 of them. Okay, of course you have to do them longer simulation. Okay, if you separate them by 1,000 sweeps, okay, you have then to simulate 10,000 times 1,000, okay, 10 millions of steps, but you can do that and then select these good configurations and, for instance, measure this correlation of x at some position and some shifted position t. And we know that this is expected to decay exponentially. This is what we saw before. Now we have periodic boundary conditions, so the exponential turns into a cosine hyperbolic. So this will be the function expected. And now we get in different separations t, we get a measurement c up to some statistical errors. That would be an example. And now we have this expected form, then we perform a fit to this with this cosine hyperbolic function, a fit to the data points. And the fit, this argument we know, and the fit gives us then this coefficient inside the argument, which corresponds in an infinite large volume. This would then be simply be the mass gap. So in this way, if we have 10,000 trajectories where we measure this correlation at the product of x, s and s, x plus t at different separations t, separation 1, 2, 3. Of course, if they are close to each other, then they tend to be very similar because this makes the kinetic term small. It's like a ferromagnetic behavior, they tend to be similar, and this is why the correlation is large. But if you separate them over long distance, let's say if you go further away, then this correlation decays, should be exponential. If it was an infinite volume, now it's periodic, and in the theory you extract from the fit this coefficient, and this is then the difference between the ground state energy and the first excited energy. So you have to go a far away to eliminate contamination by energy states. On the other hand, you should not go too far because then it's getting difficult to resolve it. But okay, if you can do such a neat fit as in this example, then you get this m here, or the inverse correlation length, up to some uncertainty, of course, which the fit gives you. But it is a fully non-perturbative uncertainty. It's given at finite delta or beta, then we have to repeat this at different deltas and take the limit delta to zero, and this way we get a result at finite lambda. But we can deal with lambda 1 or larger, nothing prevents us from this, and perturbation theory would obviously fail, right? Okay, so now this is actually where I wanted to get today. In case anybody is interested in performing exactly this simulation for the unharmonic oscillator, I have done this once and I have written notes where I explain again what should be done. and I give results here. So if somebody wants to do that, he could simply implement this in whatever he likes, a C or Fortran code and so on, and compare to these results. So if anybody's interested now or Friday, if he changes his mind, I'm happy to give him this a copy of these notes. Okay, good. If several people are, I think we can copy them again. I'm very happy if somebody does this. Okay, one needs to know a little bit of programming language, but actually it's not much. You can do everything from scratch. The only thing that you need as an input is, of course, a random number generator. This you cannot do yourself, but there are this you find, for instance, in this book, Numerical Recipes. What I used here is what's called RANDOS, RAN2. This works very well. You can simply copy it. It's about 20 lines which you use as a black box, and this gives you random numbers between 0 and 1, which are very reliable. And so all the rest you write from scratch. You know exactly what you're doing, and then you can vary the parameters. I give you here some examples, and you see that I can reproduce, for instance, this curve with the energy cap. There are results for that that you asked about, which are quite precise already. So if you switch on lambda, how this energy gap increases and so on. So this is quite useful. And if somebody is interested in solving analytical problems like this imaginary Gauss integrals and so on, I also have a set of problems here, but I don't know if I really can bother you with this with these questions yet. Okay, so happy to give you this.
What is the new room? Mm-hmm. What is the new room here? What is the new room here?
Oh, 315D. It's from Jose Elias' office, two offices behind. Yeah. Okay, 315D. Let's see what it is. Okay. It's my name, Wolfgang. Okay. Yeah, so if you start and then some problem, some question shows up, I'm happy to look at it with you and see if you can solve it. So that's usually the explicit questions only come about once you start to do it. But if you really do it yourself, then you know for all your life exactly how this works. So I would be very happy if somebody does that. Or you can also do it together. That's also fine. Okay, thank you very much for your patience. Okay. So, oh yeah, taking almost 2 hours, so that's